Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and I want to welcome the callers and chatters to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This show will provide individuals interested in genealogy an opportunity to listen, learn, and take action. Well, thank you for tuning in to my first anniversary show. That's right, 54 episodes and over 56,700 archive listeners have truly made this labor of love a memorable occasion for me. It was more than a year ago when Antoinette Harrell, producer and host of Nurturing Our Roots, offered me the opportunity to test out my idea for a show called Research at the National Archives and Beyond. And Melvin Collier, the author of 150 Years Later, Broken Ties Mended, was my very first guest. Well, when I launched my own show in November, Michael Henderson was my first guest, and he gave such a wonderful history of his ancestor, Agnes Mathieu. Then Natan Elaine Kemp agreed to serve as backup co-host, and my brother, Alvin Alexander, gave me his music as the theme song, Sweet Mellow Spice. Valencia King Nelson of Afrogenius offered to sponsor the show and to post an announcement on the Afrogenius.calendar every single week. And I could always count on Angela Walton Raji to call me after a show to say, "Girl, that was the best show ever. Oh, I can tell you this has been a year for me." And Thomas McGinty was so supportive of me just launching the show. Well, I just can't say thank you without thanking my wonderful husband, who has unselfishly closed the doors and maintained complete silence as I broadcast from the various rooms of my home. And I have to also thank all of the special guests who've given up their time and expertise to take their place on the hot seat, as some of them have called it. Time that has gone by so quickly, and just happy anniversary to everyone who has been a part of this exciting, exciting journey. Well, tonight's show will focus on a very interesting topic. Non-genealogists think that we're nuts, with special guest Dear Myrtle. Have you mentioned to your friends and family that you're searching for your roots? Do you do the happy dance whenever you find a new relative, or for that matter, a new document? Do your family members look at you and shake their heads? Well, you are among the millions of individuals who have devoted hours and years to tracing and documenting your roots. Nevertheless, we do need to explore the obsessive, enjoyable journey of genealogists and find out why non-genealogists think that we're nuts. And I am so happy to have Dear Myrtle on the show tonight. We know who Dear Myrtle is. She She is the non-diplome of Pat Ridgely Erickson, author of the award-winning Dear Myrtle Genealogy blog, consistently among the top 5 history blogs internationally, where her focus is on beginning genealogy topics. A speaker at regional and national conferences, including several live video casts at Root Tech 2011 and 2012. Mert is co-founder of the Genia Quilters Group on Facebook and founder of the Genia Webinars.com. And this is a centralized calendar and blog for all known genealogy webinar hosts and virtual presenters. Now, if you have ever attended a session where Dear Myrtle was the speaker, you left with a big smile and a warm feeling that you have just made a friend who understood exactly where you were coming from and why genealogy is a passion for you. So let me give a warm welcome to Dear Myrtle to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. Welcome, Dear Myrtle.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on your 1-year anniversary. That's dedication. I'm really proud of you, Bernice.
Well, thank you so very much. It's just great to have you say that, because you know what a labor of love is like.
Oh, it's not easy coming up with different topics every week, and you are consistently being featured by Blog Talk Radio. I just got to toot your horn for you and tell people what a great radio host you are. Way to go.
Well, thank you so much. Well, let's kind of let people know who you are. So what motivated you to get involved in genealogical research?
Well, I always tell people that I had to get hit by a dump truck before I got serious about it.
Okay.
And it's the truth. I always thought my parents were nuts because they did genealogy. My dad had piles of those old family group sheets and a big pedigree chart that folded out. But I did have a dump truck hit me up there in Montgomery County, Maryland. And it seemed that after that, I used a walker and a cane and stuff like that. And one place that made me feel safe to go was the Family History Center, because in those days, it was only really, really old people also using walkers and canes who used
Family okay.
But all I had to do was find one document that proved who an ancestor was, and I was hooked. It's just like everybody else's story. That first document you discover on your own, you're hooked.
You're hooked. So why did you decide, or when did you decide to call yourself Dear Myrtle?
Well, in the olden days of being an online genealogist, we just had message boards on AOL. We couldn't even send email over to CompuServe in those days. That's where Dick Eastman was. And Myra Vanderpool Gormley was over there on Prodigy. Rhonda McClure was on Genie. We were all little isolated islands. It was before the Internet. And what we discovered was, once we had a genealogy group going on AOL, I just decided I'd start writing articles, but I didn't want to have to worry about my grammar. I wanted to be able to use colloquialisms like my real Grandma Myrtle. So we came up with the theme of Dear Myrtle, and unfortunately my friends recognized me by my typos. So I never thought I would be speaking all over the world, as a matter of fact. It's just that the concept of having somebody like old Mert there to help you along, we all have similar problems trying to trace our roots, whether we have Irish ancestry or African American or convicts to Australia, we all search for documents that give us clues, and that's the fun of talking about it and working on it and blogging about it, as Dear Myrtle.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit. let's explore this obsessive nature of genealogical research. Why do you think that non-genealogists think that we're nuts?
Well, I like to think about some of the posts that our good friend Audrey Collins, who works over in England at the National Archives of the UK, she has a blog post called The Family Recorder, and I kind of agree with her. Naturally, my internet just went down. That's nice. But we are kind of addicted to genealogy. If almost all our family photos of our kids growing up have them lean against tombstones in cemeteries that we visited, that could be an indication, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, that's something else.
You know that you're addicted to genealogy when you attend a genealogy chat, and this really happened to me, and my daughter Carrie always teases me about this. She was in junior high school, and it was time for bed, and I was in a genealogy chat on AOL, and she went to her bedroom and kind of yelled out, "Good night, Mom, I love you." And she said, 30 minutes later, he said, "Oh, good night, honey, I love you too." You kind of get
Now that's a shame. Poor child.
Yeah, but she's the one of my daughters that's committed to doing genealogy. She has her own genealogy blog, and you may have seen her on some of my webinars. I don't know. She did.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, she's a pretty spunky girl, wouldn't you say?
I think she most definitely is. And she has a wonderful mom who has really taught her the ropes, would you say?
Yes, she's really coming along nicely because she isn't just the quick-click kind of genealogist that's out there on the Internet. She has been known to stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning because she's exploring on her dad's side of the family. I haven't worked on it as much. And she's looking at documents at Ancestry.com and Genealogy Bank and some of the websites that we know quite well. And then the next morning or a day or two later, she'll call me up and say, "Okay, put on your Dear Myrtle hat." I'm like, "Okay." And she's saying, "Mom, now these are the things I've looked at so far. And I'm thinking that this means that these are the parents of this ancestor." And she says, "Well, what do you think about it?" And I'll say, "Okay, well, have you looked at this and this?" Like, one thing I suggest she do is look at Family Search's wiki.familysearch.org, because she's doing research on her side, on her dad's side, in localities I'm not familiar with.
Uh-huh.
You ask me Missouri, you ask me Maryland, you ask me Kentucky, 1783, I can do that. But she's talking New York and places up there, going toward New England. I don't know anything about it. So then she reads about it. And so the fact that our conversations now are mostly about ancestors, that might let you know we're a little bit obsessed about the topic of genealogy.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm seeing different people write comments about addiction. And one of the things, I don't know if I shared with you, one part of my life, I served as director of alcohol and drug treatment center. And so I looked at some of the symptoms of addiction. And so I'm going to just run these symptoms past you and to the listeners. And let's have a dialogue here to determine if indeed we are addicted. One symptom is just preoccupation, always thinking about when and where to search for your ancestors. You know, another one is no longer being able to reduce or stop how much you research. You think we have some people with those symptoms? And needing more and more records. What do you think? Just finding excuses to search, such as I could not think, and so I turned on my computer and started early this morning, something I did this morning. breaking promises. Yeah, what about breaking promises to friends and family?
No, I don't do that because I consider those memory-making opportunities and opportunities to share what I know. But again, that's my preoccupation with genealogy.
What about, do you ever have symptoms of withdrawal when you can't search?
Yes. When Ancestry or Family Search goes down, you ought to see Facebook postings. You know, Tina in the chat room is saying, how about if you refuse to give out Halloween candy because you want to research instead of getting up to answer the door? I wonder if anybody.
Okay, Tina. What about avoiding people in situations that do not involve genealogy?
Yes, although gardening works if you're doing heirloom potatoes and tomatoes and herbs. And snippets from your great-grandmother's garden.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, goodness. Okay, folks, I'm saying guilty. I'm hooked. Oh, gracious.
I know. And then Rachel had something up here. Let me scroll back. She said she knew she was hooked the first time she stayed up till the sun came up. Yep, I've been there. I've done that.
I've done that. Oh, my goodness. And, somebody's saying, what about deep depression where you're home and your friends are at the conferences? Oh, goodness.
It's getting better now that some of the bigger genealogy conferences are streaming live some of their sessions. That really helps us a lot with our addiction, don't you think?
I think so. I think that really does help. But let me tell you what we're going to do right now. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back because everybody has a genealogy story. And so I want to start with you about your genealogy story, a few gems with us, and then we're going to open up the phone and hear some of the other genealogy stories and some of the stories where people, they were kind of misunderstood and people thought that they were a little nuts. So we're going to come back in a few seconds, okay? Quick break. At the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio Show. You have been listening to Dear Myrtle, and this is Bernice Alexander Bennett, your host, and we have been talking about genealogy, addiction, and why non-genealogists think that we may be a little nuts. And so, Dear Myrtle, everyone has a genealogy story. Would you share with us a few of your stories so that we could understand why non-genealogists may feel this way about genealogists?
Well, a lot of people do know that a few years ago I married Gordon. He calls himself Mr. Mert, which that's a very secure man who can do that. And half of the year, 2 months at a time, we're here at his place here in Virginia, and the rest of the time we're at my place out in Utah. Well, just today and yesterday, I've been working in the kitchen, and we had to take some things out of the cupboard, and way in the back of the lowest cupboard shelf next to the sink, out came some old pieces of silver, and each one, these were trays and two trays and a cake plate and two muffin tins, and each one of them had a taped note on them that said, these are Nana's muffin tins. And I about cried. They aren't even my ancestors. They're Gordon's. I know his Nana. I know her because he's told me the stories about her. And I think that's what's so important about being a genealogist. For us, we look for documents. But for the rest of the family, it's the stories we have to tell about Nana. Now, in the case of his Nana, the mother of his mother, she encouraged her daughter to go to pharmacology school. There weren't too many pharmacists that were female in the 30s and the 40s.
Uh-huh.
And so she put a big emphasis on education. And so that's my big find, is that it isn't always a document. Sometimes it's something as insignificant as a tin muffin, a muffin tin, and very precious to us. And when I went and took it to show it to him, you've got to bet there were tears in his eyes. And especially here in mine, because we both got it. We both get it.
Uh-huh.
And then I have another thing to share. Mr. Murda told me that upstairs in one of the guest bedrooms, there were Christmas ornaments in the closet, and I just needed to pull out the boxes. Well, the first box I pulled out was like a blue file cabinet carrying kind of a box that would hold about, 10 inches of thick files. And in that box are letters that Gordon and his sister wrote to their parents, and the mom saved them. And so what I'm going to do, again, this is helping the non-genealogist to relate to it all, taking the pictures that we have and taking these letters that were saved, that were considered important by Gordon's mom and dad, and saving, scanning them, of course, but giving the originals back to his sister. It's going to be a heartbreaking thing at Christmas. Very tender, precious feelings to give her those things back.
How wonderful.
Yeah, and you see how those aren't breakthrough things about finding a long-lost marriage record, but they're just as precious to us.
They are. Now, they truly are.
Tina is saying her favorite thing is a Christmas card that's signed by Betty, Marlo, and Tina. She's the oldest of eight, and that's the only Christmas card with just her and her parents signing it. She cried when she saw it. Grandma, I guess it was a card they sent to Grandma. Grandma had kept it in a box with her cards and gave them to her. Very cool.
Cool. Well, I blogged about something this week, and it was because of the impending hurricane that I chose to look at a box that my mother just had a lot of stuff in when she evacuated New Orleans in 2005, and she's so good. She had all her medication lists and insurance papers and everything else, and so I had that, but I never looked at anything else and decided, let me take a look in this box and see what's in here. And you wouldn't believe what I found. Her 1929 transcript from school. I mean, I just could not believe it. Her 1929 transcript. That was important enough for her to evacuate with her transcript from school. And it was just a lot of other things, but that one I could not believe. And you wouldn't believe the courses that she took in 1929. Education today is dumbed down compared to what they had to take back in the day.
Oh. Now, was this elementary or middle school or high school? What was that?
It was between, I guess, junior high, middle school, because it was between 1929 and 1933, and she graduated from high school in 1935. So it was a really comprehensive transcript because it showed each year that she was in school from 1929 to 1933. It had her birth year, her street address in New Orleans. I mean, it was just, it's a gem, I can tell you. I'm just something to be very happy about. But, you know, Jim Myrtle, I want to open up the line for those who may want to call in and just share some of their stories or put some of your stories on the in the chat room. The number is 646-200-0491, and press 1. And when you do call, I'm going to just call out your area code so that you will know that you're live. Please feel free to call and share with us some of your genealogy stories. You know, I saw something earlier where some people think that that's all genealogists do is just look at dead people. And I guess the whole issue is having people really understand what is genealogy all about. And so what do you say about that, dear Myrtle?
Well, I definitely think that to get people interested in genealogy, we do talk about the heirlooms and the pictures. But as genealogy researchers know, we have to look at a variety of records that may show a family relationship or may infer a family relationship. And how fun it is to be looking at all these documents. I just remembered seeing a blog post from Angela Walton Raji. You mentioned her earlier during the beginning of the show. And she just found a document that mentions her ancestors as being slaves owned by a slaveholder. And it's the first document like that that she's found. And that's a new discovery for her. And that's just phenomenal when people can find those documents. And another thing, while you're waiting for people to call in, what's that number again?
Well, I actually have someone online. Area code 301.
Good.
You're live, area code 301.
Yes, hi. Hi, how are you doing, dear Myrtle? I have a question for you. I'm wondering, how are you doing?
Just
I'm a little
great.
Hoarse right now.
You're
but
doing okay.
Oh, I am. I hope you can understand me well enough.
Yeah.
But my call is concerning, do you have a particular way that maybe we could interest our young children that are like in elementary school age level, maybe a way that they could apply scrapbooking just to their everyday life that would make it fun, or even maybe take a scrapbooking event and turn it into a school project for credit. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I do have all kinds of suggestions because I'm a grandma of 7. Of course, the youngest one's 14 months old, so she relates to the songs my dad sang to me, like 5'2", eyes up blue, and all those funny things. But my the majority of the grandkids are in that 7 to 10 years of age where they like to do tactile things, as you mentioned, scrapbooking. Another thing they like to do is to make stick puppets, like out of the tongue depressors that doctors use. And acting out stories about ancestors that you tell them. Although I must tell you that I do have one grandson, Cannon, who dressed up like one of, on my dad's side, I have early Mormon pioneers, and on my mom's side, you have the people who tarred and feathered him. But Cannon was dressing up like one of those pioneers who crossed the plains in a wagon, like not exactly a Conestoga wagon. That was one thing he neglected to study up on when I talked to him about the mode of transportation. So one of his classmates saw him give his presentation dressed up like William Warner Player, our original immigrant. And then the student asked my grandson, now how did he get to Salt Lake? And my grandson thought a minute and said he took the train. The train wasn't going there yet. sometimes it gets challenging.
That's hilarious.
But they do like to dress up and act out, don't you think?
Well, they do. Yeah, they most certainly do. My granddaughter is at the age now where she likes to express herself in drawing.
And she
likes to cut. Yes, she likes to cut and she likes to color. So I was thinking maybe of a fun way that we could apply those little skills she has. So she's only five in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. If she could apply those skills toward maybe putting it down into a scrapbook that's meaningful to her, so that it has value to her as time goes on, and she can look back when she's much older and say, oh, I did this when I was in kindergarten, and this is what I was, maybe, you know, if there's enough information or enough detail in what she does, she might be able to say, and I was thinking about such and such a thing at the time. And then, you know, dear Myrtle, maybe even if not in just what she can do, but maybe even in pictures, because most children now have access to. Yeah, they do. They
have
the ideas
idea.
And all that. What is it?
I have an idea. You know that she's good at drawing. And to a five-year-old, her ancestors are her parents and maybe a grandparent that lives close by, like you. And so what you can do is have her draw those pictures and then ask her questions, and you write down the story as she, you know, what's your mother's favorite color? What does your dad do that makes you giggle? Do you like to eat this or that? Or, you know, what's your grandmother's favorite song to sing? And then you write the story part because you're literate and capable, but she's a budding artist, and then focus on that part. So that's my suggestion.
I like that idea.
That's a great idea.
Yes,
well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling, and I'm seeing some other ideas popping up in the chat. So thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we have a comment coming out by Rachel Yancey, and she said, my grandparents met in the Army during the Korean War, and they both have Army scrapbooks. And you know what? It's sometimes hard to keep the chat going because it wants to flip on, but they both have Army scrapbooks. Made me look at them as a young people versus grandparents. Great photos and written notes. The scrapbooks show their pre-marriage, pre-family personalities. Love them. Oh, I love that. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
It's hard for little kids. It's a great idea because my youngest grandson, who when he was 4 years old, he just couldn't believe that his mom was once my baby. So trying to show that, you know, he understood baby, but he doesn't know how that worked. You know? So anyway.
Right.
Wonderful.
Well, there's another comment coming out of the chat. Someone was given letters by her grandfather that the grandfather wrote to his parents while he was serving in the Marine, as a Marine in World War II. Wonderful. This is great. I tell you, there's just some great ideas coming through. So she feels that she knows him just by the letters, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's important because Carolina Girl mentions that that particular grandfather was killed in the Pacific, so she never mentioned or never met him. I never met my paternal grandfather because he died of lung cancer before I was born, but it's the stories, the pictures, the letters. Those letters are priceless. But Carolina Girl, you are so blessed to have those. That's awesome.
That really is. Now, I see G-Time Ma, Tina, she's going to do a young kids seminar next summer at the library. So that's great. That's wonderful. Just great ideas. I want to know what other people are doing and what else are they experiencing as far as genealogists and engaging the family. I mean, what kind of recommendations would you have for them, dear Myrtle?
Well, I think that it's important to recognize you as a genealogist are probably going to be the one to organize family reunions, and we tend to have get-togethers at the birthdays or the holidays coming up. This is a great time to, you know, go around and with a video camera. It doesn't matter if it's jiggly, but then focus in on different family members and say, tell me one memory you have about your mom or your brother or your grandma or whatever, and build your own family library of memories. And then from that video. You might be able to expand it with additional photographs. And, gosh, I have a recording of my dad singing in barbershop quartet type that I put in the background. People can borrow that if they no. Something along that line would be good. Okay. So can people still hear us? Annette, can you still hear us there? Oh, Annette's saying she took her family history books with, made them with lots of pictures, and she published it with Lulu.com. That's a good, have you ever done that, Bernice? I have done one book that way.
No, I haven't done that with Lulu. I have put together something, and my sister actually had some kind of software where she surprised me with a book of my work. And so, which was great because it gave the whole kind of history of finding the slave owner descendant of my family. And so that was a nice way of the family kind of understanding the journey
and so
of discovering
was.
That.
Yes.
Yes. I also see someone coming through saying they made copies of letters and made a scrapbook for her mom. And but she was 3 when he died and really has no memories of him. So once again, very, very good ideas coming up. Not to mention the PowerPoint presentation every Christmas of pictures from previous years.
Oh, yes, that's a good idea. We did that when we had the memorial service for our parents. They died within 9 months of each other, and they'd both been on hospice. I was really surprised. You know, I was pretty busy planning the memorial service and getting the house in order for extra guests and putting up grandkids and kids in hotel rooms, you know, close by. But one of the grandsons brought his large flat panel screen TV that was new in those days and hooked up his laptop, and he had a whole slideshow going constantly on a loop, and we sat it up on Dad's organ bench. He had a big organ in the corner of his pretty large living room there in Medina, Washington. And so that was just playing all the time while we were eating our food after the memorial service. And I was like, way to go. That was one of the grandsons doing that. One of Dad's grandsons, Dad and Blanche's grandsons. And so it can surprise you at times like that how the non-genealogists, I mean, they do care about family. They just don't want to go looking at microfilm and going through dusty old courthouses.
So what do you recommend? I mean, what happens to those genealogists when they start sharing what they're doing? Just how can they get the family members engaged without having them roll their eyes and make comments that the genealogist would just turn and say, you just don't understand? What can happen to bridge this kind of, is it, I don't know if it's misinformation, a lack of understanding, but what would you recommend?
Well, one thing I think grandparents can do, we actually have a lot of power. I have way more respect as a grandparent than I ever had as a parent of teenagers. And so you can sweetly and kindly take advantage of that if you're in that age bracket like old Mert here. And but it doesn't matter, any age group you can do this. When you're doing something like making Christmas cookies or trimming the wicks on the candle on the menorah, something like that, that's a very tender time when family members are open to your telling the story of how your grandmother did that and showing the picture of her on the shelf. And sharing those traditions are a very low-tech, very high-impact way to begin sharing one's heritage.
Uh-huh.
And I think sharing heritage is really important because we're in such a high-tech society where, you know, we don't live on Walton's Mountain with 3 generations in the house, good night, Billy Bob, and all that sort of thing. We're all over the map, literally. and great distances can divide us, but this very technology can bring us together. Like, how about a weekly Skype call? How about a monthly one featuring an ancestor?
Uh-huh.
These are just interesting ways to pique the curiosity, to let people know what it is you've come across lately.
And what about social media?
Yeah, Tina's talking about Skyping with her new grandson today. Tina's grandbaby was born 2 days ago, wasn't it, Tina, over in Germany, and Tina's in Tennessee. And there's no way she could go, but she gets to communicate and see him and be part of that whole thing. Oh, October 24th. Man, am I way off on the dates. I think the hurricane scrambled my brain, Bernice.
Oh,
anyway.
Right. Well, I see also that Michael Henderson shared last Christmas copies of a PBS program titled The Galvez Papers. And this is about one of his ancestors, and he made and presented a copy to each one of his 7 siblings. And a copy for his parents, along with a story about the genealogy journey published in our Heritage magazine. That's wonderful. And I'm certain that all the family members probably were very, very happy to obtain a copy of that PBS program.
You know, that's incredible. Because it really is not very expensive to make copies like that. But what it does is put one's heritage in the hands of that family member. You know, Rachel is saying in the chat room that she put a slideshow to music for a video for just the immediate family, and then she did different pictures for different decades, and she's working on a project. But that concept of sharing with their own copy as opposed to just something they look at when they go to the family reunion, I totally love that. You know, when I went to my dad's house, okay, I'm going to get soppy here. When I went to Dad and Blanche's house, Blanche is our stepmom, but essentially our dear, wonderful mom, knowing that this was their time to be on hospice, what I did at night to entertain myself while I was keeping an ear out for him was I looked at the old home movies and videos that Dad took, and it reminded me of the wonderful things that were had happened in our lives. Yes, the things that they were facing in their end of life, that's what we all face. But the things also, and the wonderful things we've done together as families. Some of it not so wonderful, like how Dad would always yell at us when we're trying to back up the boat and get it in the water without crashing into the dock. Things like that.
Uh-huh.
That can make me giggle now. But that helps us appreciate who we are and helps us focus on the happy things when we may be going through difficult times.
Oh, yes, you are so right. It does make you just develop a whole new perspective about life and how things were beautiful and fun, and you know that there's a transition coming about. But what a wonderful way to see a memory, feel a memory, and to know that there was wonderful life in there somewhere.
Holy,
now, somebody's talking about a family blog. Do you have a family blog?
Yes, I have one that's very private that's just for my children and grandchildren. And it chronicles a trip that Mr. Mert and I took two of my grandchildren on a trip from Utah to see the greater D.C. area. And I have a new blog that I'm working on that's my dad's family, not his family, that's his school experiences up on Queen Anne Hill in Seattle, Washington. And I found I have his elementary school picture, you know, class picture, his high school class picture, and a lot of memorabilia that he saved. And within like 6 weeks and only a few postings, I have over 600 followers over there for people whose parents or grandparents also went to Queen Anne School, which was the elementary school, and then you went to 4 years of high school at Queen Anne High. So anyway, like Michael Henderson saying, having a blog called Finding Agnes, where his family members can view what he's found on his family tree, this new document you discovered this week in a pension file at the National Archives, that new gravestone from Find a Grave, for instance, I mean, our family members are not going to be going to the National Archives or looking at the Find a Grave website. But if you bring them to your family blog, like Michael's talking about, then they can experience this journey of discovery as it's so rightly called. It is a quest, and it is a challenge. But that can be followed, and they can get as excited about that pension application file and watching the signatures as they deteriorate every couple of years when a new application is being submitted. And yeah, very precious, good idea to do a blog. I love it.
Yes, yes, and I see that there's a couple of Facebook family groups where they share information. And so you find that, I mean, the young kids are on Facebook, but then I guess the old folks are taking over Facebook, so maybe they might be migrating to something else. But clearly you can at least touch bases with the young folks on Facebook and just let them know and, you know, put in a little genealogy, some finds, you know, just like my little blog that I wrote because I wanted other family members to know what I found in the grandmother's hurricane evacuation kit. It was just something to share and to let them know that was precious. That was precious to her because she left with it, but it's also... you will find that other family members have things that are just very near and dear to them. Well, what about some of those other artifacts? I mean, you mentioned a few artifacts, and I know I have a 1908 carnival glass that was given to a grandmother that I never met because she passed away at a very young age, at the age of 32. But I have this glass that belonged to my grandfather. And my mother gave it to me. And it is so precious.
Yeah, when we think about what people have endured because of this recent Hurricane Sandy going through, some people have nothing left. But
right.
How fortunate you are to have that. And here's something, Omer, if I could be so bold as to advise you. I would definitely take a picture of that carnival glass.
Oh, yes, I have multiple pictures.
Yes, and be sure to tell the story behind it because we never know when there's going to be some kind of natural or man-made disaster that can sweep through your neighborhood or mine. And the story of that carnival glass would be lost. And it's sometimes those pieces, those carnival glasses, the muffin tins, things along that line. That's an icon that represents that ancestor. And then the stories can be fed into that. And sometimes all I've had, for instance, all I had on my Lowell Frohman, that's my mother's father. He was divorced from my grandmother when my mother was about, well, she was younger than 10. I can't remember the date off the top of my head. But all I had about him was a fishing license and one of his old clarinets. And it took me about 23 years before I ran across some pictures in an old trunk of my grandmother, she'd been divorced from him, where there were pictures of Lowell Simpson Frohman. So sometimes all we have is that artifact or that heirloom. We may not have a photograph. We may not have a tintype or an amber type. We may have only what has been passed down through the family in the way of household implements.
That's
did
right.
Did your mother or grandmother use those potato mashers that have
yes.
kind of like a wiggle? Yeah, those were hard to use.
Potato masher. And, you know, you remember the old iron I remember seeing the old iron used at the door. Maybe it was a doorstop.
I know. Well, and they'd have to have more than one of those irons because one would be sitting on the wood-burning stove while the other one was pressing a collar or cuff or something like that. And the other one could heat up while one was being used. So amazing technology. That was high tech in those days.
It was something else back in those days, but if you still have something, I remember this old pot that my mother used to have, and I don't know what happened to it, but it's something that, you know, was, you would find it in the yards of people, and they plant things in it, but was old pot that she said they used to boil, they would boil things in. So, I mean, it's just so many little artifacts and things that people don't think is worth keeping, keep them, hold on to them, and I guess wrap the story around what's in that artifact. And perhaps family members will not think you're so nuts. They'll be appreciative of the fact that you studied the history of that artifact and that it is something that was near and dear to your family.
You know,
here's Angela talking about, she remember. Oh, somebody's talking about the old washboard. I remember seeing the old washboard.
I remember my Grandma Myrtle having a wringer washer downstairs in the cellar, and it was a dirt floor cellar, and there were two rooms off of that dirt floor cellar that had built up floorboards. They still smelled very musky. Do you remember the coal bin? Do you remember coal fire furnaces?
No, I don't remember coal fire furnaces.
Well, then I'm older than you are, darling.
No, I don't think so. We won't tell that.
We won't tell. You know, I'd like to really compliment Rachel, who's in the chat room, because she said she started last summer trying to scan and catalog photos, and she feels like she's way in over her head. But I gotta tell you, I agree with Bernice. So those of you who are doing this wonderful thing of preserving your heritage, amen to y'all, because this is so precious, and we don't want to lose sight of these images. I remember the Brownie camera that Karen's talking about.
I remember the Brownie camera. Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, do you have any kind of closing remarks before we close out the show tonight? Anything that you would recommend that we haven't already talked about so that when people hang up, they can say, I had an aha moment. I've thought about something. I've been given an idea. What can you say to people?
The thing that that's a good question, which is also a stall tactic that some of our presidential candidates have used during their debate. Here's what I think. I think we're supposed to be having fun while we do this.
Uh-huh.
As newbies come along, new people in your family come along, and they may be sort of working on doing a little family history, they're not going to do it perfectly. I wasn't perfect when I started. I dare say you probably weren't perfect at it when you started, Bernice. None of us were. So
no.
Let's have fun, relax, and realize there's a little milk before the meat, that people have to learn to crawl before they can walk. So as people come along, they may tease us. They may do things quickly and not quite as thoroughly as we would. Then we can take that and have a conversation because they're at least trying. That they're doing it to the best of their ability at that point in time. So
that's
let's
right.
Have fun while we're climbing our family trees. I think it's a good plan.
And genealogy shouldn't feel like a painful experience, as you say. It should be a joyous experience. And go ahead.
Sometimes the stories we may uncover are sad, heartbreaking. To see a mother lose three of her children within 6 weeks of each other during the 1918 flu epidemic, that's heartbreaking. some of the stories we encounter are difficult to deal with. And as when it comes to right to privacy, yes, I would put the story in your notes, but I really don't tell tales on ancestors unless they're dead and gone and their children have passed.
Uh-huh.
That way, nobody's toes are getting stepped on. I mean,
uh-huh.
everybody's got black sheep in their family. Everybody's got tales that could be told. And I agree with Angela, who says, never let anyone steal your joy. Somebody, True Lewis was saying, the family discourages and always teasing and saying, yeah, we're genealogy nuts. But, yeah, this you hang out with your genie friends like this, and that's where you'll get some comfort and strength and encouragement, because we all understand how great it is when you find that long-lost relative and you know how to make the connection on your family tree.
That's so true. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight, and I want everyone to just know what's happening next month. Next week. Next week, I'm going to be joined by co-host Nathan Elaine Kemp and author Bernie D. Jones, who is the associate professor at Suffolk University Law School, will discuss her book, Fathers of Conscience. Now, this book examines high court decisions in the antebellum South that involved wills in which white male planters bequeathed property, freedom of both to women of color and their mixed race children. Now, these men, whose wills were contested by their white relatives, had used trust and estate law to give their slave partners and children official recognition and thus circumvent the law of slavery. The will contest that followed determine whether that elevated status would be approved or denied by the courts of law. So this is something that, you know, we go into those court papers, we see manumissions, but we never really quite understand the dynamics of what happened in the courthouses and what happened when the relatives didn't like what the white fathers did. So this is going to be a very, very interesting show, and I certainly want to encourage you to tune in next week. And by the way, all of my shows are every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So I'd like to just say good night. Thank you so much, dear Myrtle. Thank you for joining me tonight. And remember, everyone, your ancestors left footprints. Therefore, you should follow the clues that are presented to you through oral history, family records, research at the National Archives, and beyond. Now, you can continue this discussion on the Genealogy and History Forum of Afrogenius.com and the Research at the National Archives and Beyond Facebook page. And remember to listen tomorrow night or tomorrow morning to the African Roots podcast with the cheerleader, Angela Walton-Raji, on Friday, and Nurturing Our Roots with Antoinette Harrell on Tuesday and Wednesday. Thank you for joining Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett. Good night, and I look forward to you joining me next Thursday. Good night. Good night, everybody, and thank you so much, dear Myrtle.
Good night.